You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Have you ever noticed how a bolt of lightning looks like the branches of a tree, or how the flow of a river delta, viewed from above, sort of looks like the veins in your body? Well, according to Duke University professor Adrian Bijan, the fact that these wildly different structures look so similar is no coincidence, but is a consequence of flow systems. Using his background in mechanical engineering, he's come up with what he calls a basic principle of nature that he claims has been overlooked until now. He's called his book Design in Nature, How Constructal Law Governs Evolution in Biology, Physics, Technology, and Social Organization. He's written it with the help of J. Peter Zane, and it is published by Doubleday. I'm very pleased to welcome Professor Bijan to our show today. Hello.
Thank you for inviting me.
Now, you call constructal law a unifying law of design in nature. It unifies everything?
Absolutely. In fact, the examples with which you began come from the two domains that before the constructor law were thought to be completely separate, animate flow systems and inanimate flow systems. Animal design, for example, was not to be confused with river basin design.
And you say that it governs, quote, any system, anytime, anywhere, encompassing inanimate, animate, and engineered phenomena, as well as knowledge, language, and culture. That pretty much covers everything.
Everything, provided that thing is a flow system that has the freedom to morph, and it is the freedom to morph that allows the system to exhibit its natural tendency, which is the constructor law, the natural tendency to persist in time by morphing, by changing its configuration to flow more and more easily for greater and greater access on the landscape.
But, okay, so I can understand how that works with a river basin, but or a circulatory system as animals develop. Would you also apply it to something like the New York subway system?
Absolutely.
But there were plans for it to be different, and it wound up just the way it is because at a certain point we stopped building.
Yeah, but the life of the subway system is not over. It is morphing, and it will continue to morph until we can cover the landscape here more easily. The animal design that obeys the constructor law is everywhere. It is the movement of animal migration, animal society, animal reproduction. It's the movement of animal mass as rivers of animal mass on the landscape.
So you write a lot about flow systems. What are the two features of a flow system?
Well, the trivial one is the size of the flow. People talk about the volumetric flow rate of water in the Mississippi or blood in our bodies. But the feature that I am identifying as the phenomenon is the flow configuration, its type, in this case tree, but the fact that it is free and it is morphing. The drawing is alive. The drawing is dynamic. It is not still art.
But our circulatory system is not morphing. It's the same as it's been since Homo sapiens began walking the earth.
Well, I agree with you. In fact, this is one of the difficulties that the biologists face when they have to explain evolution. Evolution took forever, and because of that, we cannot witness the movie of evolution. It is for that purpose that in Chapter 4, I turn this problem on its head, and I talk about watching evolution in sports. Sports evolution is quite similar. There's a selected population of would-be fastest athletes, and you can see how that goes from year to year or from one championship to the next championship. And the future of that evolving society is predictable. We have predicted it.
Well, go ahead. But if you're at Duke, you win pretty much every year, so what's the difference?
The joke about that is not in Duke's favor in the sense that I predicted that the hierarchy of basketball will not change no matter who is running Duke.
But how is that evolution?
Well, no, the feature that the design acquires because of its free evolution is hierarchy. And hierarchy is good for the flowing of the design. In your example with basketball, the flow system is basketball talent coming from the entire country to just a few main trunks of the basketball river basin, and everybody knows where the Rome is, meaning all roads lead to Rome. So Duke is one of those.
Well, in the circulatory system, we could say that it developed to have the most efficient to get blood to every cell. But in the case of a river system, the rivers flow according to the valleys and everything else that are already there that allow the water to flow through them. Sometimes they, as things change, the earth moves a little bit. The course of the river moves, but it's pretty much just to take advantage of what's already there.
No, actually, I like your two examples. The first one is actually the other way around. The valleys are where the river was flowing. The river is responsible for carving those valleys. Your example with the animal, the blood flow. As you said, there was no known principle why those flows should be efficient. The constructor law states in physics terms what it means to be flowing efficiently.
Now, you're coming up with the equivalent of a unified theory of everything, although we're not talking about string theory here. We're talking about something that has more to do with a practical aspect of life?
I have to clarify. What I have is a law of physics, which is the law of design and evolution for everything that flows. The belief that this law is correct is the theory, in this case, constructor theory, or the applying of the constructor theory to useful gadgets is known as constructor design. These two things, the constructor theory and the constructor design, are many, depending on the many objects or flow systems to which you apply the constructor law. But what I have is a law, and because it is a law, it is for everything.
And you're not getting involved with the big debate over intelligent design and things of that sort.
No, I respect everybody's thinking. In fact, all humanity is about making sense of what's around us. I have a law of physics, and I'm discovering that people around me find it useful in strengthening their own understanding of nature.
My guest is Adrien Bijan. He's written with J. Peter Zane, Design in Nature, How the Constructor Law Governs Evolution in Biology, Physics, Technology, and Social Organization. You say that nature is governed by a tendency to generate shapes and design that evolve in time to reduce imperfection.
Mm-hmm.
How do you define imperfection?
Imperfection is what stands in the way of easier flowing. They are known as bottlenecks or strangulations or flow resistances or logs that fell across the rivulet. The natural tendency of everything that flows is to smooth those things over, to get them out of the way, all the way to engineering, which is about trying to mitigate flow resistances.
So what do you believe happens to flow systems, whether they are riverbeds or alveoli as time goes by?
Those features are what we observe them to be because they have evolved in this direction. The riverbeds are designs or flow configurations that provide least resistance from flowing from the area to one point. The alveoli is the same thing. The alveolus is a very special, predictable configuration for the diffusion of one gas into a tissue and vice versa. And it's a design that involves not only a drawing, but also the rhythm, the time scale of air in and air out. All that I have predicted actually quite early with the constructor law.
Now, how does this fit in with Darwin's ideas of evolution? He kind of suggested there is no direction to evolution, but you're suggesting there is.
Two things we are actually helping people see his vision. One is that There is direction. It's spelled out in the constructor law is toward the configurations that flow more and more easily. Secondly, there is determinism or predictability. We can predict the pattern or we can speak with confidence, broadly speaking, meaning we can see the forest from the trees. That is something that's not currently accepted because of Darwinism. And finally, let me...
Well, in Darwinism, we have natural selection, which is, as I understand it, a response to the changes in the environment and therefore kind of random.
Correct. That is the doctrine that is now complemented, if not turned on its head, by the constructor law. The random thing is present in the, as you can see in any design such as the river basin. No one knows the irregular shape of a particular stream because of the geology which happened to be in place, but it is a tree, and the tree configuration is the baby really of the constructor law.
But if everything evolved to flow more easily and efficiently, wouldn't everything have stayed just a single cell organism?
Hardly. The tendency is to have access to more and more space. This is why what was flowing at that small scale had to look different when the scale became bigger. That's why cells came together to flow together, meaning multicellular animals came into being. Vascularization appeared to connect and feed those larger systems. All the way to the current animals, which are basically the big vehicles for moving animal mass on the planet.
Is this something that you've come up with all by yourself, constructor law, or is this something that has been kind of in the works for a while?
I plead guilty to having come up with a constructor law.
So why do you think it's been overlooked so long? If it seems obvious, if you go along with the theory, it seems obvious enough.
What has been overlooked is the following. Everybody knows that the world impresses us with configurations. What has been overlooked is actually calling design and design evolution as a phenomenon of physics, which means a universal phenomenon. If you accept that it is a phenomenon, then you have to give it a law, which previously did not exist.
Stephanie from Colorado left a comment on our show page. She asks, how does flow theory correlate with fractal math?
The fractal geometry is a descriptive method. The mathematician who invokes a mathematical algorithm and repeats it in order to make a drawing has to pick the right algorithm in order to show you the right drawing that looks like something in nature. That activity, the mathematical choosing, is no different than that of the painter who chooses the right kind of a paintbrush and shows you only the painting that looks like nature.
Okay, let's put Chris from Purchase, New York, on the air. Hi, Chris.
Hello, sir. I just wanted to remark about flow patterns, coincidentally. When I was studying the form of nerve cells in the brain, I took a break, needless to say, and went skating with a friend on a river. At the river bend, there was an area with small holes in the ice that had been frozen over. And it looked as though when the water level raised, the water came out of those holes. And then when it went down, it flowed back in rivulets back to those holes. And then it had frozen over. And I was skating around these things, and I was absolutely struck that the forms of those rivulets were the same as specific types of cerebellar neurons. Those are nerve cells in the cerebellum, and they were granule cells and Golgi type 2 cells and, you know, maybe even basket cells for some forms. And I was sure it had to do something with the flow patterns, and I was sure that perhaps this determined their form and development of each individual's brain, you know, as they develop from a embryo to an adult. And I knew I would never figure it out.
You have to be very pleased to receive this telephone call.
I confess, I get goosebumps and tears when I hear this. I grew up on the Danube. I've seen what you just described, the freezing and all the thing and the melting. The meltwater carves its rivulets in a beautiful sheet of ice.
Exactly.
And it's at a different scale. But the reason for the tears is the following. I grew up around my father, who was a veterinarian, and he showed me the same phenomenon in the growth of the chicken embryo on the inside surface of the egg shell. That particular growth is the same as the inanimate flows you just described in the ice, and at a much smaller scale. It is an animate flow. And I have to tell you, I've got my understanding of design and nature from these striking similarities of these two totally separate worlds.
Chris, thank you so much for calling us.
Yes, sir. Thanks so much for having me. Bye-bye.
My guest is Adrian Bijan, who is Duke University's J.A. Jones Distinguished Professor of Mechanical Engineering. And he has written with J. Peter Zane, who is teaches journalism, a book called Design in Nature, How Constructal Law Governs Evolution in Biology, Physics, Technology, and Social Organization. It's published by Doubleday. Stay with us. We are back with Duke University professor Adrian Bijan, who's written a book called Design in Nature, How Constructal. By the way, my computer doesn't like that word. The spell check keeps on changing it to constructural. Constructal Law Governs Evolution in Biology, Physics, Technology, and Social Organization. The book is published by Doubleday. Jesse, one of our listeners, asks, does this apply to growth systems like economies or self-organization in the development of cultures?
Those examples are manifestations of the constructal law. The economy is a tapestry of all of our movements. And all these movements have design. The tapestry is a superposition of all these tree-shaped flows. Each of us is actually connected to the rest of the world with many trees. And social organization is another name for that.
Elizabeth in Brooklyn asks on our show page, Buckminster Fuller has developed theories and an entire new system of geometry, synergetic geometry, to articulate mathematically the fundamental structure of nature. Did his work impact your work? Or have an impact on your work?
I am aware of his designs. I'm a fan of all great geometry and architecture. My understanding is that those are still static structures. The architectures of the constructive law are dynamic, not only because they flow, but because they morph in time, and they morph because they have freedom to morph.
But in most animals, we see symmetry. That would suggest no flow, wouldn't it?
No. We see both symmetry and asymmetry. For example, in the architecture of the lung, most of the bifurcations of the air tubes are symmetrically shaped, like capital Y. However, in order to fill the thorax completely, these trees acquire a strange shape, these lobes that are far from symmetric. It takes both. It is one reason why people are struck by diversity and randomness in addition to pattern, but there's no conflict between the two.
That happens even more in the brain, doesn't it? No two brains develop the same.
Absolutely, but the pattern is that they are both brains and that the flow through them is tree-shaped. We're learning more and more that's what's going on.
Now, if constructal law is a basic law of nature, how do you explain the quantum world where we get things that actually seem to be contradictions?
I I do not know. I'm not an expert in N-domain. This is why in this book and others I've commented that the constructor law should have been discovered 200 years ago, before physics became enamored with the infinitesimal. The constructor law is about a phenomenon of the macroscopic, a phenomenon of masses that contain huge numbers of elemental entities.
You describe constructor law as a way of seeing. What do you mean by that?
I am with that. I draw attention to the fact that science begins with images in the mind. So to have a discussion about the constructor law and design in nature, we should basically recognize what we're seeing with the eyes of our mind.
And
first,
you mentioned organizational flow. Any bureaucracy is often governed by a flow chart, which, if you turn it upside down, looks similar to a tree or a riverbed. So does constructor law apply to how government bureaucracies develop, whether they are doing good or not doing good?
If that flow system is free to change, to design itself, then in no time it will show you a hierarchical structure. My own department at Duke has a hierarchy, and the hierarchy is good for the functioning of the whole. The Lang architecture has hierarchy, as does the architecture of the Mississippi River Basin. So hierarchy is good for the flowing of the whole.
But does it allow us to predict how the hierarchy will develop?
I am not a sociologist. My guess would be yes, because I've tried it with success in predicting the hierarchy of the river basin. I showed that every large river should have, on an average, four tributaries. And if you can predict that, you have predicted the entire hierarchy of all the rivers.
But the internet is not hierarchical, and it runs fairly efficiently as a flow system of information.
Actually, in the beginning, perhaps, but now the internet, because it has been allowed to evolve freely, is throwing at us a very obvious hierarchy. There are only a few top websites that are contacted by everybody, and then a myriad of secondary, and then a huge number that are not known. So that's hierarchy par excellence.
And One replaces another. MySpace gets replaced by Facebook.
Absolutely, but the ones that rise to the top are the few large that flow together with the many small. They all fill the space. They're all necessary in the same way that the few big channels of the river basin flow together with the huge areas covered by wet mud.
My guess is Adrian Bijan. His book, Design in Nature, How Constructal Law Governs Evolution in Biology, Physics, Technology, and Social Organization, written with the help of J. Peter Zane, published by Doubleday. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. How does this work in terms of culture and language? Because I would assume that they would all pretty much develop in similar ways, but they don't.
But they develop hand in hand or hand in glove with the movement of humanity on the globe. Good ideas travel and persist because they facilitate movement. Language is one of those. Alphabet is another. How to write a good novel is another. Science is the big one, meaning how to note. To predict the future, from Greek geometry to the things that we are inventing here on the show today. All these things are good for our own design, meaning for the design of our own movement on the landscape, for our efficiency, for our safety as we move, for our longevity, and for our health.
You see globalization as a flow system.
Yes, globalization actually is the evolution of the already global flow system.
It's already been there, always been there, hasn't it?
Yes, that's it. By the way, not many would agree with your observation.
We've always had trade. We can find,
yes.
In fact, in this series that we are running from the British Museum, they find a jade axe in Britain where the jade came from Alps, and we're talking prehistoric times.
Yes, the The globe was vascularized with our movement for a very long time. Globalization is the thickening of the tissue of our flows that covers the globe. That's what globalization is.
John asks online, can seeing the path of easiest flow be simply a consequence of the system seeking the state of lowest thermodynamic free energy?
No. This thing with the settling into the dead state of least energy or maximum entropy, some other words like that, is a statement or a restatement of the second law of thermodynamics, which is for which the phenomenon is the phenomenon of irreversibility. That is a different phenomenon. There is no drawing in the phenomenon that was just mentioned. The phenomenon of design in nature is self-standing. It is different. It is, first of all, that system that flows and morphs is not an equilibrium. It is not an equilibrium state. It is in a non-equilibrium state, if we are to speak the language of thermodynamics. So that's why the constructor law is a new law, not only for physics, but for thermodynamics.
Well, all for a system to work, a law to work, it has to be able to work with all the other laws that have been established. This has been a big problem in developing a unified theory of everything in physics, getting Einstein to somehow work with quantum physics, and nobody has really worked it out yet. Does your constructor law work with all of the other laws, thermodynamics, for example?
Yes, the reason is that each of these laws, including Newton's second law of motion, is a first principle. So the first principles, including the two laws of thermodynamics, are pillars that hold the tent over everything. So when you have this time a new pillar for the first time in 150 years, the tent is supported by a much stronger structure. Because once again, finally, under the tent comes a new phenomenon, which is that of design in nature.
Adrian Bijan's book, Design in Nature, How the Constructor Law Governs Evolution in Biology, Physics, Technology, and Social Organization, is co-authored with J. Peter Zane and published by Doubleday. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much.